Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 3, the Chicago Center for Supernatural Support, Episode 7, August. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. First few days after the first full moon, Grant had taken seemingly every viable opportunity to text August with questions about when they should show up next month, as if she hadn't told them when they left after the pancake breakfast, and as if they hadn't discussed day planners at length during their downtime the first night, because Kelly was bemoaning the loss of her calendar, and August and Todd were pitching the benefits of the brand they used, which showed sunrise and sunset and moonrise and moonset in little letters on the side of each day. But Jillian was arguing that buying a day planner was a complete waste of money when you already have a phone. And then Grant had sheepishly pulled his calendar out of his bag to show that he, magically, had the same kind as August, which sent August and Kelly into a fit of uncontrollable laughter, and sent Jillian off to get more coffee in a huff. He sent questions about if she needed/wanted any help setting up next month, since it really seemed to help Derek calm down to have some physical labor to do. He texted her to ask if he should be expecting any different behavior from Derek now that he was transforming at the center. What kind of behavioral changes, she asked. Should he be dancing, he asked. I mean, he can. It's not a side effect. Maybe he's just in a good mood. Should he be eating 4 roast beef sandwiches from the craft service tray? That's a lot of sandwiches, she said. But he's a big guy, right? I don't think you should be worried about it, but if you'd like, I can call Craig. Is he supposed to have red spots on his arms and face? Is that a werewolf thing? August paused. You're pulling my leg. He sent her back a smiling emoji. Then he sent her a picture of the craft services table, which might have had roast beef sandwiches, but August was too distracted by the enormous pile of donuts and all sorts of outlandish colors to notice. The next day, he sent her a selfie of him and some other person. How can you not know who Chris Springfield is? Trish screamed. They were at a baseball stadium, wearing Cubs hats. Am I doing Chicago right? He asked. You need a hot dog, she said. An hour later, he had a hot dog. It had a pickle and tomatoes on it and everything. Good job, she said. Now throw your hat in the trash. Shots fired, Trish said, craning over August's shoulder. August twisted away and retreated to her office. Grant wasn't mortally wounded, because the next day he sent her a picture from the lakefront, because he was apparently at the lakefront. Don't you have a job? She asked. We're on location, he said. We're on a boat surrounded by sound people who are having a terrible day. Otherwise, I'd invite you. So then they were just texting. Weird thoughts, jokes, pictures of Derek dressed like a cop, pictures of Todd dressed like Todd. Questions about things to do in Chicago and advice about things to avoid. Derek and Grant would sometimes fly to New York or L.A. to do press junkets. Grant explained that they'd never done press junkets together before, and Derek was way too excited about it. Derek started sending her updates, letting her know when she could see Grant on TV. Grant said there was no reason for her to watch his interviews, since they would just be him talking about himself and the show, and they would get repetitive quickly. Derek disagreed. So August found herself curled up on her sofa with a frumpy sweatshirt and a pint of ice cream, watching a late-night talk show in the dark. You're filming on location in Chicago, the host said. We are, Derek said. It's a great city. Everyone's so polite. No, have you noticed how polite everyone is? It's wild. Derek already bought a house, Grant said. Grant and Derek shared a couch opposite the host's desk. Grant's shirt made the color of his eyes pop. It was kind of hard to look away. So you've fallen in love with the city, the host said. Oh yeah, Derek said, but not as much as Grant's fallen for it. Right, Grant? It's lovely, Grant agreed. Yeah, Derek said, lovely. A real go-getter, Chicago is. Great personality. What did you say about Chicago the other day? Elegant and confident? Eyes you can get lost in? They stared at each other for a moment. Derek with a grin, Grant placid and mildly interested, as he always was when Derek was on his nerves. Reactions washed over the studio audience in waves. Understanding, shock, excitement, indignation. "Oh, tell us more," the host said, leaning forward on his elbows and propping his chin on the back of his hands. "Tell us more about Chicago." "It also has a sharp sense of comedic timing," Grant said. "Does it look serious with Chicago?" "So serious," Derek answered. Then he started singing My Kind of Town, and a few bars in, both Grant and the host had joined him. August's phone rang, and a moment later, Grant's voice was in her ear as well as on her television. "Please tell me you're not watching this." "You have a surprisingly good singing voice," she said. "Was this planned?" "Oh, you all have microphones. Wait for the band to kick in." "Ah, very nice. You know, I bet this would have gone over better if you weren't filming in New York." "True," he said. "I don't know how you can say you love Chicago when you haven't even taken the L yet. That's the best part."
"Is it?"
"Yeah, and how can you say you love it if you haven't even taken it to dinner yet?" He hummed in agreement. "A significant oversight on my part. I apologize." "Apology accepted. I should be back in town Thursday. How's Friday night work for you?" "Friday's good," she said. Her lungs felt warm despite the ice cream. "Should I pick you up at 7? "Yeah." She couldn't help grinning. "It's a date." A date she had to cancel at the last minute because in a fit of productivity, Paul had decided to replace all the bulbs that had burned out in the rec room over the past year. There were several. And he had replaced them all with very nice full-spectrum lights. And August had to go around with a ladder and find all the ones he just replaced and re-replace them with bulbs that wouldn't burn anyone's skin off. And then she'd had to take Paul to task for being thoughtless and then threaten him to keep his mouth shut so that his mistake would never come to light. "Is that a pun?" Grant asked. "Come to light?" They rescheduled for Saturday, deciding Grant would pick her up at the center. But then he had to cancel because filming went long. So long, in fact, that he didn't get done until after midnight. He texted her to let her know how late they'd finished and asked if there was any chance she'd want to get drinks, but she'd fallen asleep at her desk on top of that month's budget report. They rescheduled for Monday, and of course, a Sharuf kid, out for the summer and set to take the weekly fire-wielding Tai Chi class for meditation and control, figured that would be a good day to set Todd's car on fire. The fire had to be put out, a story had to be invented, the police had to be called, they had to bring in AAA, and Todd had to rant about his insurance rates. They rescheduled for Thursday and had to cancel because August got slimed by a sick goo, and this was not the kind of slime that would come off with running home and taking a shower.
"Like Nickelodeon slimed?" Grant asked.
August didn't want to touch her phone, and she let Trish send the next text in her stead. This was probably a bad call because Trish was very detailed as she explained what exactly the color of the slime was and how it smelled and how bad August looked. "Tomorrow?" Grant asked once August had called him back without coating everything she touched in sludge. August hissed. "It's corn harvest time. I'm leaving tomorrow morning and I'll be gone all weekend."
"Why are you going to the corn harvest?"
"Because corn pixies still haven't figured out to get out of the way of modern harvesting techniques. They used to be able to move to a different field or a different part of the same field, but now it happens so fast that they just get thrown into the combine, and corn pixies aren't the hardiest little guys."
"What do you do?" he asked. "Stall thousands of corn combines?"
"Of course not. I'd drive around in a parade float." Grant hummed.
"I assume that makes sense if you're familiar with corn pixies."
"You know it does."
"And I assume I shouldn't ask if you want company."
August paused, rubbing her damp hair with a towel.
"You want to come?
If I'm invited."
"It's super boring," she said.
"You know how boring Illinois is driving on the interstate past cornfields? It's that for 3 days, only slower, and on little country roads."
"Sounds like you could use some company. A distraction?"
She paused again.
"I'm sorry," he said. "That was presumptive. Are you free next week on Tuesday for dinner, or should we wait until next Friday?"
"Can you really get away for a whole weekend?" she asked.
"We don't pick up filming until Monday."
"It really will be boring."
"I don't believe you," he said. "You should prove it." I'm leaving first thing in the morning, like 5 a.m. Think you can be at the center by then? Should I bring coffee? He asked. And donuts, she said. Friday morning, August was up before the sun, but it was already hot in the parking lot. The float had been parked in the lot for the last week, blocking about half the spots, which had irritated a handful of vampires who all refused to carpool to group or take public transit. They'd rented the parade float, a two-tiered trailer covered in layers of white sparkling fringe with red edging. They'd filled the levels with tightly packed, absurdly tall stalks of corn, the process of growing it helped along by some volunteer dryads and a grumpy leshy. They'd strung fairy lights all through the corn so it twinkled and glowed as if already inhabited by pixies. Strings of bells ran around the float's edges and zigzagged through the corn, so the whole thing tinkled in the wind and jingled wildly as August and Paul hitched the float to the back of a borrowed pickup truck. Grant drove into the parking lot, parked, and stared at the float, looking impressed. She wasn't sure if she should hug him. She wanted to hug him. Look at him, admiring her fantastic float. But she wasn't sure she should hug him, since she wasn't sure they were at the hugging yet. They were at talking on the phone. And they were about to go on a slow-motion road trip, towing a parade float and a million pixies. Her life was a mess. Luckily, he smiled at her, which eased something she hadn't realized she'd been worrying about, and he handed her the first of two coffees. He had clearly intended to drink the second coffee himself, but he didn't pause in handing it to Paul. Paul only paused to say thanks before chugging it. They shoved August and Grant's overnight bags behind the bench seat in the truck, set the box of donuts between them, buckled up, and eased the truck float combo out of the parking lot. Paul waved, and a million bells waved back. August had spent the last 2 weeks mapping the zigzagging trip through southern Illinois, one that would circle back on itself, hopefully picking up as many corn pixies as possible, then dropping them back off, hopefully after their fields had been harvested. The goal was not to save every precious pixie. There were millions of them, and they were dumb as discarded corn cobs. It was better to think of them as butterflies or bees rather than fairies who could think for themselves and talk back to you when they spoke. The goal was simply to save enough of them that their population wasn't wiped overnight. Corn needed corn pixies, and Illinois needed corn. August explained all this as they drove south on I-57, getting out of the city. People honked at them as they passed, and even though they might have been upset at the float's low top speed, Grant decided to pretend that they were showing their excitement for a lit-up parade float covered in corn. He rolled down his window and waved as cars passed them. The truck's air conditioner wasn't the best, and the hot air swirled through the cab, carrying an ever-building sweet and powdery scent. Grant directed her to the turnoff, and they pulled onto a country road that cut through two fields of corn, higher than the truck cab as if they rumbled through an unending tunnel. The sun was just rising, a perfect view for their first sighting of corn pixies. Lights popped in the cornfield like fireflies, there and then gone, dancing and fading. Then more lights and more, until there was a churning sea of light on either side of the road, rushing and crashing and swirling like a dust storm of glitter. Then it crashed onto the road, washing up against the truck, onto the float, the chiming of the bells drawing the pixies together, rolling them up like a ball of dough, condensing them down into the corn, where they twinkled just like the strings of electric twinkle lights. Grant watched in awe, turned in his seat to watch the float, even as the field of corn on either side went dark and quiet. "Is that what it's like every time?" he asked. She grinned at him, pressing the gas and coaxing the truck from its slow pace. "Where to now?" They stopped for a quick lunch at Culver's, which was a bad idea since August knew the grease would catch up with her, especially if they did fast food for every meal. But Grant had never been to Culver's before, so they had to stop. They sat by the window so they could keep an eye on their float glowing in the parking lot. People came up to it on the way to and from their cars, but they saw only too many twinkle lights and assumed the float was for some harvest festival or another. They walked away delighted. "A good first date, right?" she said, lifting a cup of Sprite for a toast. "Don't say I don't show you a good time." He looked vaguely puzzled. "I am having a good time." He popped a cheese curd in his mouth and hummed. Then he smiled at her. His eyes twinkled. It made August's face heat, so she turned to the window, hoping to hide it. A woman with three little dogs bouncing at her ankles and a stick in her hand was inspecting the float. Her long black hair and sagging clothing made her look old,
but her stark paleness was a giveaway for otherworldliness. Red nail polish flashed as she snatched a speck of light from the corn, inspected it, then popped it into her mouth. August swore and made a beeline for the float. "Hello," she called. The woman turned to her and, yep, that was a Roganmi, a corn demon known as a Ryant. The Roganmi either recognized August as in the know or didn't care about secrecy, because she greeted August with, "Your truck is full of corn pixies." "Yes," she said. "We've been collecting them so they'll survive the harvest. A bountiful harvest to you, by the way." "It will be a good harvest this year," the Roganmi said, her voice like a decree. The Roganmi only hung out in lush, healthy fields, so August was inclined to take her word for it. The dogs yipped and jumped, excited to snap up some pixies as well. "The pixies are stupid creatures." She plucked another pixie from the air and ate it, shifting it around in her mouth thoughtfully. "They have a pleasant snap and fizzle this year, a bit like popcorn." She turned her flat black eyes to August, and suddenly August couldn't move. "You smell of fresh corn and pixie dust." From the corner of her eye, she saw Grant exit the restaurant, a pair of frozen custards in his hands, each with a plastic to-go dome over the top. "We were just leaving," August said, keeping her voice even. She inclined her head in a bow. "Again, a bountiful harvest to you." A blink and the Roganmi was close behind her, looming over her shoulder, her cheek pressed to August. A sharp hand held the side of her neck. The air shifted around her face as the demon inhaled. August knew better than to move away. A step in any direction would be the Ryant guiding her, leading her, coaxing her. And one step away would lead to a second and a third, and then she'd be in the middle of a cornfield, eaten alive. August swallowed and kept her voice even, her eyes locked on a point in front of her, the truck's side-view mirror. "I'm sure you understand how important it is for next year's harvest that the pixies are removed from their fields. It would be a shame if I wasn't able to relocate them, seeing as I have the means to do so." The demon inhaled again. "Everything all right here?" The Roganmi spun to face Grant, and August breathed half a sigh of relief before realizing that Grant didn't know what he was dealing with. He didn't know to lock his feet and avoid offending the woman at all cost. She turned to warn him, but stopped short at the look on the Roganmi's face. Surprise. And at the same time, her cheeks had softened, and her eyes had warmed around the edges. "Grant Cole?" the demon said. Grant blinked at her. "Yes?" "What are you..." The demon's eyes darted around the parking lot, reassuring herself that they were, in fact, in a Culver's parking lot. "Hello, I mean... Closed Bell is my favorite movie." Grant looked momentarily stunned, but turned on the charm without a second thought. "I'm glad you like it. I agree, it's a beautiful film." The Roganmi fumbled in her purse. "Do you mind?" "Not at all," Grant said before the demon had even fished out her phone and set it up to take a selfie. August would need to warn him later to never again agree to anything before he knew what it was. But for the moment, she stayed quiet and hurried to take the frozen custards from his hands. He leaned shoulder to shoulder, temple to temple, and they both grinned at her phone like it was a truly auspicious day. The picture had a background of fresh corn stalks and dancing pixie lights. "Thank you," the Ryant said, grinning that the picture had come out well, and cradling her phone against her chest. Aside from a flash of sharp teeth and the heavy clothes hiding her shape, she looked completely human. Grant reached down to scritch behind one of the dog's ears. "Sweet little guy," he said. "What's his name?" "Schrotenhound," she said. Then pointing at the other two, she said, "And Kornmops and Dreschhund." "What fun," he said, giving Schrotenhund a firm pat. He took his custard from August and they climbed into the truck. "It was great to meet you," he called.
"You too."
She stared after them long after they'd maneuvered the float out of the parking lot. August was well away from the Culvers before easing the truck to a stop, throwing the parking brake, twisting in her seat, and taking Grant's face in her hands to kiss him.
"I'm glad a corn demon didn't claw off your face," she breathed, letting their foreheads rest together, nudging his nose softly with her own.
"So am I," he said, his hands curled in her hair. "I wasn't expecting that." "What, that she's my biggest fan? I do have fans, you know." "Among German grain monsters?" "Not something I would have guessed, but I can't say I'm surprised." She laughed and pushed him back to his own side of the cab, throwing the truck back in gear. He picked up the custard he'd abandoned on the dashboard when she jumped him. He looked more relaxed than he had all morning.
You know, you could have waited for me before confronting the German grain monster. I'm not sure everything you do alone has to be done alone. I worry you're going to get in trouble one day.
They started to pass the next field. In the distance, a combine chugged along. She grinned at him.
I've been fine so far.
The 20% True podcast is written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahman. Music is composed by Kimiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments and ask questions. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at Carrie and the Hits.